Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. For those of you who are interested in health and healing, the way we can look, possibly with a more positive eye, to the solutions of our time. Certainly, the environment's high up on our list of issues that we like to talk about. This is the right place. Today, no guest, no special commentaries. Instead, an entire hour devoted to addressing issues that you find important, whatever they may be. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I do want to share with you today, to begin our program, some of the latest information on why we should try, wherever you live in the United States or Canada, to close down our nuclear factories. These factories are very dangerous. Now, the reason I'm going to be sharing this information with you from Carl Grossman and other sources is because we've been led to believe by our Nuclear Regulatory Commission that we've had no major accidents, that even the Three Mile Island really didn't cause any harm. No one was hurt. As Glenn Beck said recently, not even a bird fell from the sky. And therefore, we shouldn't be concerned. And oh yeah, you know that nuclear fallout over in Japan, the Fukushima plant, no big deal. None of that's going to reach the United States. So once again, we shouldn't have a concern. Well, we should have concerns. And let me just start by giving you one possibility. And again, look at everything on a spectrum. By the way, I'm not video streaming today because it's a holiday evening and a lot of individuals are not in, including the person running our video, but you can hear the show fine. So anyhow, look at all of our problems on a curve. Now, ideally, we'd like to be at the very beginning of a curve where we don't have much of an impact. So let's say this upcoming solar storm in about a year to a year and a half. We know it's going to happen. That's not in dispute by any of the NASA or any other scientist. We know that historically when it happened, we didn't have a lot to be concerned about because our natural magnetic shield around the planet would deflect the magnetic influence. But now we have a hole in that magnetic shield 5 times wider than the planet Earth, and on 5 NASA satellites have flown through that, and it really is concerning them. As one of them said, one of the scientists, it could be a massive Katrina, but for the whole Earth. What it means is that you won't see anything, and you won't hear anything, and you really won't feel anything. What will happen is that if that solar storm, the plasma hits the Earth, it'll immediately be drawn to any electrical current and will simply overwhelm it and fry it. It will just burn it out. Now the good news is that if you have surge protectors large enough and capable enough at all of our substations and major stations and transformers, then you've protected that. You've caused minimal or no damage, and hence a good outcome for everyone. Now, that's the best we could expect, and that's on a curve of probability. But then we look at our current political climate, and we look at the industry, the nuclear industry, and it has not been willing to do anything about this. The House of Representatives passed unanimously to get behind an effort to get these surge protectors. They're about $55,000 each, and they are about the size of a commercial washing machine. but nothing's been done to date. All right, so let's go up on the curve. Let's say that no one does anything. The electrical wave hits, and now the Northeast, the Northwest, and the Midwest are the worst hit. And the surge protectors are not in place, and it literally fries the grids. At the very least, you could expect about 3 weeks if they have all of the replacement parts and additional equipment in place to get out there and fix it. That's at the very least. More probable, it will take 3 to 5 months. Why? Because the equipment needed, including the 100-ton grids, these are transformers, these are in China. Well, China's also going to be hit, so what's the likelihood of China giving us what it may need itself? That means that we're not going to have any electricity. And when I say no electricity, I mean no electricity. But more concerning to me at this moment is what happens when a nuclear facility is without electricity. That means the electrical pumps that pump the water pumps, that are necessary 24/7, and one of the largest uses of water in all of industry goes to the nuclear industry. Millions of gallons per day are pumped onto these spent fuel rods to keep the reactor and the rods from overheating. They can last about 59 hours maximum before the water then dissipates and you have some form of massive release. It could come in the form of a hydrogen explosion, as we saw in Fukushima. Now here's the downside of this, and please listen, because now we go further over on the spectrum. This is a real possibility. This is not scaremongering. This is actual possibility. And the reason I believe I should give this information is because look at what happened just today and yesterday and the day before up in Montana, in Missouri, and Wyoming and other states where massive flooding has occurred. The Corps of Engineers knew that there was a high probability of flooding and did nothing significant to prevent the levees from breaching and flooding hundreds of thousands of acres of farmland, wiping those farms out this season, flooding homes, and diverting flood water so that some smaller communities get wiped out and other larger communities will be spared to the degree it can. That's the same Corps of Engineers that told the people that I spoke with when I was filming, and I've been filming an environmental film for a long time now, the 12 tipping points, down in the lower Ninth Ward. Now, what lower means that it's lower below sea level than the rest of the ward, that don't worry, you don't have a problem. The levee that is here will protect you from a major hurricane. But that was a false assurance, as we see from water lines that are, and I measured it. I got out and filmed and measured water at 15 feet on some houses and 18 feet on other houses. And most houses don't have a ceiling that's 15 feet. Most ceilings are 8 feet. So now you've flooded the entire bottom of the house. People had to get up in their attics, and the trouble is a lot of people drowned in their attics or suffocated because they didn't have a saw to get out, and we saw people had to hack their way out to get a breathing room or get out of their attics onto the roof. The Corps of Engineers was also responsible for creating the Mr. Big, which is this complete boondoggle of a shipping lane that came in from the Gulf of Mexico and went up to benefit solely those merchants that wanted to get their product out to sea quicker. But that also meant that you now had a whole source of water that could come in and would immediately surge. It has nowhere to go, so it's going to go up and over the land. So in effect, New Orleans was like a teacup, and all around it, like Punxsutawney and the Mississippi, the Gulf, and Mr. Big, all of which were going to flood it. The Corps of Engineers knew that and did nothing. So on the one hand, when people say, well, aren't you being an alarmist, Gary? Isn't this an improbability or an impossibility? Impossible? Well, then take a look at Joplin, Missouri. 9,000 homes destroyed. And not a single community shelter have been built. take a look at Tuscaloosa, Alabama. We're talking about the last 2 months. And look at the thousands of homes destroyed. Not a single backup shelter. Take a look at the hurricanes and all the other things that have happened. Take a look at the 24,000 dead in Japan. They had a seawall, but their engineers miscalibrated the impact of a tsunami. As a result, they are now going to spend probably around $700 billion having to rebuild all that infrastructure. And now, the leaking of the radioactive materials, including some of the most devastating chemicals on Earth, are going right into the water supply and going north, which means their entire aquifer system, that where they grow their food and rely upon that water, since these are paddies that require a lot of water, are going to be forever polluted, plus going into the ocean. And that's polluting their sea vegetables, the primary source of their diet, and their fish. In fact, two whales recently caught way off into the ocean had toxic levels of radiation in their body. So anytime you say, don't worry, I'm going to show you examples of, had people been more conscious and prepared, they wouldn't have had the crisis they had, not to the same level. So are we going to get the flares? Yes. That is not in any dispute by any scientist. How devastating will they be? That depends upon how prepared we are. And what if we're not prepared? Then you're going to have nuclear holocaust. You're going to have America literally cease to exist as we know it. You could have 100 to 200 million poisoned Americans in New York City. You could have, well, let me just give you the math. The math is this. Let's just say that there was a surge of power in New York and the electricity went out. They didn't have the backup parts, and because there's no communication, no television, no radio, no satellite, no cell phones, no electricity, no street lights, no water pumps, no sewer, can't flush your toilet, can't get water out of there, can't get gasoline. Imagine how long before you have absolute chaos. Now that's one big problem. How are you going to feed these people? How are you going to get water to them? FEMA does not have the manpower nor the resources to take care of a cataclysmic accident. And we saw the disaster of FEMA with a relatively small number of people in Katrina's aftermath as compared to what would happen with New York City. Now, in the New York City area, you have approximately 21 million people in northern Jersey, New York, Long Island, western Jersey, southern Connecticut. If you have no electricity and the water pumps don't work, you've got about 59 hours. That's not long. Once that melts down, there's going to be an explosion. Now the radiation is out. How would anyone know? They wouldn't. By the time you're told, maybe a car going through the street saying, stay in your homes, put sheets over your windows, put duct tape, don't let any air in, turn off your air conditioners or your heaters, do not go outside unprotected, there has been an accident, a nuclear accident. By that time, it will probably be at least 12 hours. At a normal 12-mile-an-hour wind, in 2 hours, all the people in Manhattan have been impacted on Long Island and northern and western New Jersey, depending upon the current of the wind. By that evening, by the time that the president, everyone else knows that we have this meltdown, the likelihood is you're going to have meltdowns at the other reactors up and down the East Quarter, which that has the largest number of nuclear reactors in the United States. All these cities, Philadelphia is going to get hit, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Now, where are you going to go? How are you going to get there? What are you going to eat? Within 12 hours, you have gotten probably a lethal dose of radiation. Now, the police don't have any protective gear. How many police are going to go out in the street and try to bring order or direct traffic when their own families are at risk? Only a handful. The vast majority are going to have make every effort to get themselves and their family to safety. How do you get safety? Then you start realizing we don't have food, we don't have water, and now we've got, on top of that, now we got radiation. You won't see it, but you will feel it. Radiation sickness. And the week, everyone in hospitals will be dead. Nursing homes, dead. Assisted living centers, dead. Those who try to hide in their apartments, dead. Radiation will go right through any apartment building in New York City. So that's at the worst stage of this. Now, this is not to scare people. This is a reality. And if you say, well, it couldn't happen here, then I would ask you, how many rich people were living in beautiful penthouses and beautiful Japanese traditional homes on the ocean, overlooking it, and have been there for a long time? Today they're dead. So don't dare tell me something can happen because it hasn't yet. Because everyone listening sooner or later is going to die. You just don't know when and by what circumstances, but we never like to think about it because it scares us. It's morbid. But I'm saying, wouldn't it be wise to at least try to put into our equations that which we could reasonably and responsibly do to lessen or minimize the impact of any accident on that spectrum? So if we don't have a problem, good, at least we've been prepared. It's like health insurance or major insurance on your house. Could you imagine going through life and saying, I don't want any insurance for anything because nothing's ever going to happen to me or my family or my house or my car? Yeah. And what if it does? Well, then I'm going to scream that I'm a victim and expect you to pay for it. Okay. You better understand. Do what you can do. Now, that's why I believe that we have not, in any major form, I've been watching Keith Urban. Sad to say that he and Rachel Maddow and the others are making the same mistake, probably with good intention, to help people better understand the dynamics of the body politic. But no one on the conservative or the liberal media is touching on this issue with any depth and any concern because they're afraid to be considered irresponsible because the official position is this isn't going to happen. The official authorities say can happen, and if anything happens, it'll be minor and we'll take care of it. The official position is all, you know, we need nuclear because, as President Obama has clearly stated multiple times, nuclear is safe, it's clean, it's green, and it's cost efficient. The reality is it's none of the above. But let's get back to that whole idea that it's safe. Therein, as we begin, and after this, I'll be happy to go to your calls. This is from Carl Grossman from Common Dreams. It's called Atomic Energy Unsafe in the Real World. It's a short commentary. It says, nuclear power requires a perfection and no acts of God. We are warned years ago. This has been brought home by the ongoing disaster caused by the earthquake and tsunami that struck the Fukushima nuclear plant complex, the flooding along the Missouri River in Nebraska, now threatening two nuclear plants, and the wildfire laying siege to Los Alamos National Laboratory, the birthplace of atomic energy. Earthquakes, tsunamis, floods, fire, these and other disasters will inevitably occur. At nuclear power, with its potential to release massive amounts of deadly radioactive poison when impacted by such a disaster, and it's clear that atomic energy is incompatible with the real world. There's no perfection in human beings or in technology. Accidents will happen, and there will always be natural disasters. We cannot eliminate them, but we can and must eliminate atomic energy. Nobel Prize-winning physicist Dr. Hans Alfvén explained in 1972 in declaring his strong opposition to nuclear power. He said, fission energy is safe only if a number of critical devices work as they should, if a number of people in key positions follow all their instructions, if there is no sabotage, no hijacking of the transports, if no reactor processing plant or reprocessing plant or repository anywhere in the world is situated in a region of riots or guerrilla activity, and no revolution or war, even a conventional one, take place in those regions. The enormous quantities of extremely dangerous material must not get into the hands of ignorant people or desperados. No acts of God can be permitted. He wrote that for Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. Nuclear power is an unforgiving technology. It allows no room for error. So wrote Carl Hocevar of the Union for Concerned Scientists, 1975. Hocevar had earlier been an engineer working on regulatory safety at the Idaho National Engineering Laboratory. He said perfection must be achieved if accidents that affect the general public are to be prevented. He wrote in his foreword to the book We Almost Lost Detroit. The book is about the partial meltdown at the Fermi 1 nuclear power plant in 1966 that threatened nearby Detroit, one of numerous near misses and many other accidents involving nuclear power, in addition to the disasters at Three Mile in 1979, Chernobyl in 1986, and now Fukushima. In We Almost Lost Detroit, Hocevar described the blind faith of scientists in atomic energy and their wrong assumptions. He said, "The scientists involved were most confident that they had covered all possible problem areas. They had built safeguards on top of safeguards. Yet in spite of these precautions in the design and construction of the Fermi reactor, and in spite of the reassurances by the scientists that a serious accident could not happen, it did. The results far exceeded the expectations of anyone involved with the project. Fortunately, at the time of the accident, the reactor was operating at a very low level of power, or the consequences would have been much worse." The Fermi accident and others described in his book demonstrate the fact that no matter how much diligence is exercised in the design, construction, operation of a nuclear reactor, things can and do go wrong. Design errors occur, the unexpected happens, human error is a real possibility. Still, for many years, the nuclear industry vigorously defended the nuclear power program as being essentially risk-free. Nuclear power was claimed to be perfectly safe. It was said that no serious accidents would ever occur, and such a position was, of course, necessary to promote the acceptance of nuclear power by the general public. It has not been until just recently that the proponents of nuclear energy have admitted that accidents can and will happen, and the public should prepare itself for such eventualities. One of the chief engineers, the official engineers of all this in China, which is now considering its plans for nuclear power because of the Fukushima catastrophe, said, "We have to ensure 100% safety of those nuclear power plants." Yeah, well, that's not going to happen. It can't be done. Nuclear power can never be 100% safe. And it must be. That is why it should not be. And instead, we must get rid of it and fully implement the clean, renewable technologies of solar, wind, and other now available forms of energy. As physicist Amory Lovins, chairman and chief scientist at the Rocky Mountain Institute, recently wrote, "Nuclear power is uniquely unforgiving. It is the only energy source where mishap or malice can kill so many people so far away." Well, that's been made evident by the Fukushima disaster, the crisis along the Missouri River in Nebraska, and the wildfire at the gates of Los Alamos National Laboratory. And that's from Carl Grossman, professor of journalism at State University of New York and at Old College Westbury, who I just filmed recently on this. And a couple of other things. A big issue that this governor of New York, who I predicted accurately, if you remember, and recently I said, there's a moratorium now on fracking, but due to the corrupt politics of the state of New York and New Jersey and California, they will lift that moratorium. Well, Cuomo has done just that. But it's how he has done it that concerns me. He has said, now we're going to have really strict guidelines. We're not going to allow hydrofracking within 100 feet of something. Let me explain that, having studied carefully and meticulously the entire background on gas and hydrofracking extraction, you can have your water, your aquifer, your stream, your river, your artesian well polluted forever, even 100 miles away from one one single fracking rig. There are thousands of these rigs. And as a result, you're going to have more. You'll probably have a quadrupling of them in the next year. Why? The people running these rigs are frequently very high speculators. They're high-end speculators. They're creating financial syndicates. And what they do is the front person goes in to a farmer and says, look, you've got 100 acres here. We're just going to take a little small portion of this and we're going to put a rig on it. And you're going to get $2,000 a month in money as a lease for this in perpetuity. And the person says, $2,000 a month? No. Okay, let's make it three. No. How about $5,000 a month? Can you use $5,000 a month? Well, who couldn't use $5,000 a month? Yeah, I mean, if you're an average person, $5,000 a month is a lot of money. So the person says, okay, and then you sign the agreement. Now, once you've signed it, you're signing over mineral rights. That means that person who owns your mineral rights can put that well anywhere they want on the property. Well, hold on a second. You mean that that property I bought, that farm I bought, that idyllic little place near Walden's Pond I bought, I didn't think about mineral rights. I thought like digging for gold or something. No, it's oil and gas. And now all of these leases, all of these deeds all over America are being reviewed at the state level to see who's got property where, and then they can go in and they can buy those from the original owners, and suddenly you've got a stranger pulling up with a rig in your front yard, and you're saying, what are you doing? I'm putting up a gas drilling rig. We can't do that. Yeah, I can. I own the mineral rights. Well, but this is where I live. Well, that's too bad. This is where we now live. Well, the law can't be on your side. No, we make sure the law's on our side. This is New York State. Everything that Congress does or legislative done is based on who pays it and who influences it. So we bought governors. We bought everybody. You know, the landlords bought the mayor. We buy everybody. So that's it. Get over it. And then you think, well, how will this affect me? Well, it's going to be going for 24 hours, 7 days a week, and it makes a lot of noise, like jackhammers. Thung, thung, thung. And then you're going to turn on your tap one day and probably end up having fire come out of it. You're not going to be able to drink your water. You can't take a shower. There are going to be all kinds of lesions on your body. Your skin could peel off. And you'll probably end up getting cancer, your dogs, your animals, your cattle, whatever you got. So we're going to create a dead zone here, and we can absolutely do it legally. You can't do a damn thing. You're screwed. Surely they can't get away with this. Well, didn't all the banks and all the mortgage companies and all the Wall Street firms get away with the fraud of liar loans? Did anyone get prosecuted for that? No. Have 6 million Americans lost their homes because of that? Yeah. So if 6 million Americans got screwed because of Wall Street's capacity to manipulate the laws and the contracts to their advantage, the oil industry and gas industry are just as capable of making you just as culpable. So it's happening. And now the governor, who hired more lobbyists to be around him, a little thing that people didn't look at, the Democrats in particular, but then they tend to be very myopic, especially when you have a charismatic person, much like Bill Clinton. You know, he doesn't walk on concrete, he walks on water. And just the illusion of what these people represent. This is a sellout from top to bottom. So, remember this when it comes to nuclear, because all the hydrofracking pollution and the mountaintop clearing, all that pales by comparison to what happens if you have an accident nuclear plant. Imagine radiation going into New York City. And imagine it takes a while for them to stop it. Every building would be permanently contaminated. Forever. Forever. No one could ever work again or live again anywhere where that radiation is hit and sustaining, just as in Fukushima. But what they did was, they didn't contend with the populations around nuclear plants. Remember, when the rules were written in the 1960s, populations around nuclear facilities were sparse. So they created the 10-mile evacuation zone, meaning if there's an accident as long as you live in the 11th mile away from this, then that radius will protect you. You have nothing to worry about. Look at the Japanese, pathologically dysfunctional male society of racist and misogynist, and we are aware of that. You know, they lie about everything all the time as official policy. And if you doubt me, go to Japan and talk with some of the women in the fledgling feminist movement and see their opinions. I have. We filmed over there recently. And you'll see that you can't get an honest answer out of anyone in the Japanese government, as if we can in our own. Well, ask them this. How long have the people, how long were the people allowed to stay near the Fukushima plant before they were told to move back? And then how far back did they move? Now, let me get this straight. So you moved them back 10 miles, but you didn't move them 20 miles for over a month. And then you moved them back another 10 miles. Has someone rewritten the laws of physics, and I just wasn't aware of it, that the wind stops? Absolutely, in Japan, it's true. I mean, the emperor said so. You know, that 10 miles, no more. Pollution stops, radiation stops, it kind of drops right to the ground, and you can breathe the air, eat the food, drink the water, no problem, because we, the official government, says so, and you, being a nation of sheep, you will go along with it. You're not going to question it. Indeed, they haven't. Only a small number of activists have. In fact, a recent survey showed that over 70% of the Japanese people living in danger do not believe that they should not do more than what the government tells them because they have absolute faith in their government. Boy, that is like listening to Glenn Beck give you the truth about anything. Big mistake. So now, you live where you thought it was nice, but no one told you about the nuclear facility, or maybe just thought they were innocent of any potential environmental problem. So now New York City still has a 10-mile evacuation zone. So here's the good news, New Yorkers. If you trust the governor, I don't. But if you trust anyone, I don't trust anyone in government. I don't care if it's city government. I don't care what they tell me. If they tell me tomorrow's Monday, I'm not going to believe them until I verify it, because their psychopathic personality is completely dysfunctional. They're incapable of being honest about anything. We take the lowest human scum who desire, crave, and covet power over others, and we give them that power. How smart are we? So anyhow, if there's a nuclear accident, if there's a total meltdown at an end point, as long as you live 11 miles away, you don't have a thing to worry about. Nothing. Of course, when you start to look out at your wife and she now is kind of glowing, and you think, did you put on a different perfume? I can see right through you. She's going to say, I didn't think I was that transparent. Then understand that there is no such thing as living in a protected area around a nuclear facility. But there's no new laws. There's no evacuation plan for New York City. None. Zero. It doesn't exist. But maybe if we're 50 miles away. Okay. Well, if we're 50 miles away, that means that 26 million Americans would still be in the contamination zone. So what do you think? You think maybe it's time that you really did something tomorrow and you, the next day or two, and told your legislator and told the governor, we want Indian Point closed. There is no science to support anything involving a 10-mile evacuation zone. 4 million people now live within 10 miles of the 65 operating nuclear facilities. Population in overlapping zones was counted only once. Back in 1980, with 38 nuclear sites, only 1.5 million lived in that close 10 miles. Overall, from 1980 to 2010, the average population of the 10-mile evacuation zone ballooned substantially. So what you have to understand is I wouldn't want to be within 200 miles of a nuclear facility if it went down. The most explosive growth occurred around two-reactor St. Lucie complex in Fort Pierce, Florida, where the 10-mile population was 43,000 in 1980, but it's over 205,000 today. You also have the two-unit Brunswick complex near North Carolina's coast, which increased by over 300%. You have Monticello near Minneapolis, and Miami, south of Miami. You have all these near San Clemente, and of course you got some bad ones near Raleigh, North Carolina, and Philadelphia, Phoenix, Charlotte, North Carolina. About 120 million Americans, that's over 40% of all Americans, live within 50 miles of a nuclear plant. Let me explain that again. 120 million Americans, 40% live within 50 miles. And if there's an accident, a major accident, that 50 miles will be breached in 4 hours. So if you live within 50 miles, and there are 120 million of you do, within 4 hours, you've been hit by radiation. How much radiation and how long it sustains will depend upon what happens to you and everything else in that area. And just take a look at the geography of Indian Point. Homes and businesses dot the hillsides, sloping to the eastern shore of the Hudson River, and along its bank, curvy two-lane main artery kind of meanders. Well, you've got choke points at the Bear Mountain Bridge, just north of the plant, and Route 202 slog the old Peekskill and the Tappan Zee Bridge. And if there's an accident, there's no way for people in any number to get out. It'll be one giant parking lot. So you think maybe now's the time that we got together and said, no more nuclear plants, close them all down. It's been a lie from the get-go. And, oh, you're going to argue, or one of the people who are pro-nuclear will argue, that not to worry. Don't believe Gary Noll. Because we have the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and federal regulators on our side. Yes. And here's what the Associated Press found after doing an in-depth investigation. I'll quote from Common Dreams. Federal regulators have been working closely with the nuclear power industry to keep the nation's aging reactors operating within safety standards by repeatedly weakening those standards or simply failing to enforce them, an investigation by Associated Press has found. Time after time, officials at the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission have decided that original regulations were too strict, arguing that safety margins could be eased without peril. The result, rising fears that these accommodations by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission are significantly undermining safety and inching the reactors closer to an accident that could harm the public and jeopardize the future of the nuclear power in the United States. Examples abound. When valves leak, more leakage was allowed. Up to 20 times, 2,000% the original limit was suddenly allowed. When rampant cracking caused radioactive leaks from steam generator tubing, an easing test of the tubes was devised so plants could meet the standards. Failed cables, busted seals, broken nozzles, clogged screens, cracked concrete, dented containers, corroded metals, and rusty underground pipes, all of these and thousands of other problems linked to aging were uncovered by AP's year-long investigation, and all of them could escalate dangers in the event of an accident. And yet, despite the many problems linked to aging, not a single official body in government or industry has studied the overall frequency and potential impact on the safety of such breakdowns in recent years, even as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has extended the licenses of dozens of reactors. Industry and government officials, of course, defend their actions and insist that no chances are being taken. But the AP investigation found that with billions of dollars, 19% of American electricity supplied by nuclear, the industry has a cozy relationship with its regulators. Records show a recurring pattern. Reactor parts or systems fall out of compliance with the rules. Studies are conducted by the industry and government and all agree that existing standards are, quote, unnecessarily conservative. Regulations are loosened and the reactors are back in compliance. So just understand that all nuclear energy reactors are leaking radiation. There is no such thing, and I have examples of every single one in the United States in my hand right now as we speak. And let me just give you one more example. This is from Jeff Dawn, AP national writer. The tritium leaks found at many nuclear sites. Quote, radioactive tritium has leaked from three-quarters of U.S. commercial nuclear power sites, often into groundwater, from corroded buried piping. The number and severity of the leaks has been escalating, even as federal regulators extend the license of more and more reactors across the nation. Tritium, which is a radioactive form of hydrogen, has leaked from 48 of 65 sites, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So, they didn't tell you that. Well, what happens when that goes into the water? And what happens when more deadly forms of the radiation go in with it and can stay there and then follow the groundwater into aquifers and streams? Is anyone testing for it? How about no? So that's just to give you the latest on that and why we should now stop, take a moment, and close down our nuclear industry. I'm Gary Knoll. That's opening comments. I'll go to your calls now. Our number 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Gary Knoll, let's say hello to Bill from Long Island. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Doing great.
Good. Very well. Listen, that was some opening you just gave. Really what I wanted to talk about is my concern for the disingenuousness of the whole cancer industry and the whole corrupt granting process that seems to be granting money to organizations that keep researching the same thing and coming to different conclusions each time they put out a report so they can get more money to study it again. Now, we waged war, we claimed war against cancer about 40 years ago, and 40 years ago we were using radiation and chemotherapy, which is exactly what we're doing today. And I find it just unbelievable that there is not an organization out there that is really looking at the true causes or the cures for cancer, and why people aren't outraged at this point, because this to me seems to be a human rights issue. People are suffering horribly under these treatments.
Okay, let's hang here with me, Bill, for a moment. Let's see if we can turn this into something that we can not only learn from, but be empowered by. Have you ever heard of the concept of turnings?
No.
Okay, turning, T-U-R-N-I-N-G-S. A turning is when, let me make it different. How about passages?
Sure.
Okay, we all go through passages in life. One of the problems is that as we're in a passage, we frequently don't appreciate the significance of the passage we've just been through, and we're absolutely clueless about the passage that we're going to go into. So when, for example, you're madly in love, you never think of a divorce, you never think of a settlement, you never think of someone betraying you. And I'm one of those people who believe you should never have a relationship unless you can honor the relationship. If you can't honor it, fine, then don't get in one. But also, once you're in one, understand that it also has an expiration date in its current form. It can evolve, it can change, but nothing ever stays the same. And hence, this philosophical notion of turnings. Now, at the beginning, we have excitement of rebuilding for tomorrow, meaning we're all inspired to do something good, like a war on cancer. Let's get this disease processed. Let's protect lives. Let's help those people who are sick by putting our best and brightest minds and unlimited amounts of money into it. That's the first phase. Are you with me thus far?
Sure.
Now, who are you going to give this money to and who are you going to trust? Official institutions. Because have you heard me say that there's only one truth in America that's allowed, and that is the official truth?
Sure, but could I just interject for 1 minute?
Sure.
And say that I think most people, I know you talk about the 5% of people that listen to you who actually actualize. I mean, there's 5% of people who understand this, what's going on. My question is, how do we create, within the 5%, a paradigm shift in research?
Okay.
I mean,
I'm going to get
research.
Bill, I'm going to get to that. But I need you to go to neutral now for a moment and focus upon the process that I'm opening up for you. All right? So just be a little bit focused and patient. So we have to start someplace, and we always have to start with those who have been given the authority to be the official guides. And that is the only truth we can allow. No one is going to start a war on cancer and ask in the alternative doctors, the alternative patients, the Cancer Control Society, Ruth Sackman's original group. They're not going to bring in Dr. Samuel Epstein, even though he's a highly qualified MD, PhD, University of Illinois, who studies cancer and its actual causes. Dr. John Goffman, who says there's no such thing as a safe x-ray, one single x-ray in your life and you can get cancer. None of these people, they're not going to invite a Gary Nolan, none of these people are going to be invited in, no matter what truth they have, because it's not official. Why? Because with official, you don't walk alone. You have an entire army. You have a parade. You have floats. You have bands. You have people standing at attention with their hair on their arms straight up because they know they're witnessing something important because it's official, the official war on cancer. So you have to give the money and you have to give the guidance to something official. You don't go in and say, okay, we're going to have a battle tomorrow. We're going to give it to you, private. To me, yeah, you run the war. I'm just a private. You're the general. And then you got a one-star, two-star, three-star, four-star commander-in-chief. No, we always have authority at the highest level deferred to in all decisions. That's the ultimate official decision. It's like the commander-in-chief is the ultimate responsible person until, of course, they're caught committing to a war that was a lie and torturing people against the Constitution, and then suddenly they squirm and weasel out. They don't want to be that responsible at that point. I'm sure that the law says, and I'm sure we can change things, national security issues being what they are. So all phases begin the first turn. So on this big wheel of life, you have your first turning, the turning of excitement, and let's solve the problem, and let's do it with joy and work together. Then you have the second turning, or the second phase. Now, the second phase is the awakening of our consciousness, meaning a rapid social, personal change, intellectual change, moral change, creative achievements, where everything then is hastened. And that's where you start seeing miracle cure coming, you know, wonderful treatment, new drugs. We've got to give money to the pharmaceutical industry because they're the ones who are going to help us solve this problem. So this is the awakening of conscious. Gee whiz, we're mapping the genome. We understand the life of a cancer cell. We've got these great drugs that can treat it. We just need more money, and we need a check and a checkup, check and a checkup, and over and over again. Then you have the third turning in this wheel, the breakdown. The crisis is everywhere. The truth is revealed. Everything, everyone is seen with a different light. You lied to us. You didn't tell us that you were making $200,000 a year by selling chemotherapy drugs. Psychiatrists aren't allowed to do that with patients. Cardiologists are not allowed to sell heart drugs. Why are you taking all this money and look at all your patients? 99% of all your terminal patients are dead. They're toe tagged. The largest morgue in America is at Sloan Kettering Cancer Hospital. You have massively failed. You have your peer review groups. These are just an old boys club where you all get together and continue to fund each other's work. You have grants of doing the same work over and over again. Nothing is new. You refuse to look at real causes. You want to make it all genetic so you can create a drug that is gene specific. But then again, you did that in the other fields when it came, oh, you're fat because you have the fat gene, or you're criminal because you have a criminal gene. You're an alcoholic because you have an alcoholic gene. But none of that was real either. But you really betrayed us because everyone came into your office and sat there and you said, I can deal with your colon rectal cancer with, we're going to give you cystoplatin, and then we're going to give you a radiation, and then you're going to get better. But you didn't, and the science wasn't on your side. You didn't even have science on your side. And the science you did have was science that you rigged. You controlled the design. You controlled how it was interpreted. And you compared it to other chemotherapy. You never compared it to something natural or no chemotherapy. You have lied at every level, but you've controlled the media. You control the people, the suck-ups, the American Cancer Society that should be abolished and all these other organizations. You've had your marches, and nobody wants to get in the way of a march for breast cancer. You made it seem almost patriotic and heroic that women go out and wear, you know, something pink, and the basketball and football players wear something pink. But it's just a fraud. Everything you do is a fraud. You're a liar. You're pathologically lying. And yet every day you're rewarded for your failure. And someone says, yeah, what do you intend to do about it? You'll write an article. You'll do a broadcast. No one's going to pay attention because no one official will dare touch it. The suck-up degenerates over at the New York Times, do you think any of those people are capable of ever going against the officials? Never. All right? Never. So where exactly are you going to have your truth told? You can't, because no one in any official position, no one getting grants, no university that gets the money from the chemotherapy companies, no one is going to give you a form to tell the truth. So we're going to continue with our war on cancer, and we'll continue to make promises, and we'll continue to have people believe us, because people want to believe the father figure. They want to believe the main alpha male and female. They want to believe that which is a part of their culture and heritage, official institutions. We're part of the tribe. You're not. You're the one who came to a difference of opinion, and now you're out. If you're an evolved scientist, if you're a journalist, no matter who you are in your field, you will be excluded the moment you challenge the official position. Remember, in America, there's only one official reality, and that's whatever comes out of any institution that's considered official. But even though the truth has been revealed for those who have that awakening, and then you have the next turn, you have the surrender. Now you have the depression, the apathy. You have anger and rage. You have denial and avoidance. That's where your Democrats and liberals are now, denial and avoidance. The Republicans have been there a long time ago. And that's where everything stays in a gridlock and strong ideological battles are fought. And finally, you have where you want us to be and where we will be when enough people, more than 5%, maybe 10 to 15%, realize the truth when they go from being rigidly ideological to independent and then progressive. Then you have the final turn in this. The last passage is the new beginnings. You're forced to change. You can no longer adapt. There's no room for adaptation. And that forcing of change where everything is a new choice to do its opposite. And you realize that what you have denied, you cannot change. So you must look with a new eye and bring in new people. And in that sense, you take away the power of the original paradigm. That's the ideal. It's no different than me telling people, are you prepared for any disaster? And they say, no. And we're not going to be. Do you think someone there is feeding their fat face with terrible food and stuffing it with French fries and having a 4-hour bowel movement, if they are lucky, and reading a full Reader's Digest in the New York Times, do you think they're going to possibly care about a nuclear facility meltdown? You think they're going to care about anything? They are already gluttons of life. They're in gross denial of anything that they have to be responsible for. So on the one hand, Bill, be realistic. Don't be a Cassandra here on and or Pollyannish. Instead, be pragmatic. Say yes for those of us, however few we are, as long as we know the truth and are proactive, then we will write the letters to close the nuclear plants. We will not support living, feeding ourselves with McDonald's or fast foods. We will not buy clothes made in these other countries. We will not support the abolition of the minimum wage, but rather increasing our standard of living. We will fight every battle we can, because that's what proactive, independent-minded and progressive-minded people do. And then we will find those doctors who are using alternative therapies and support them. And we will find the holistic nurses and support them, and the holistic nutritionists and support them, and buy local organic produce. And we will then prevent the conditions that the rest of the public think we're a bunch of idiots and nut health nut jobs. Well, I'd rather be a health nut than a sick nut. So we are doing the right thing, but Bill, I have never opened a closed mind. I don't debate anymore. I don't do interviews anymore. I stopped doing interviews years ago. I don't do them because I realize they're absolutely worthless. Debates are worthless. These discussions to a closed mind is just theater. You know, it's like someone from BAI says, why don't you go on as a fundraiser at the Ethical Culture Center do a debate? And yes, and that's going to change how many minds? None. You either come believing in something or disbelieving in it. The disbelievers won't change their mind and the believers won't either. So we have to go forward and put your energy where it's constructive and positive and something good can happen. Stop with the idea we're going to change mind. Do you think for a second that I can't and you can't read every one of these pathetic sociopaths in Albany or Washington? We know who they are. These are the lowest human scum on earth. And that's who I refuse to vote for. I will hold my vote as precious and hold it and not vote until someone worthy of that right to have that vote to return us to a republic. We're not a republic. And we haven't been since it was a good notion but never actualized. And we are a pathetic excuse of a democracy where you can buy anyone and buy anything. And people are nothing more than commodities. And cancer, the war on cancer, is nothing more than commodification of people with a disease and making sure that you can then commercialize. The chemotherapy business is great. The radiation business is great. But the amount of people surviving and thriving and being cured is not. Hence, you're rewarded for a paradigm of failure. And then you disguise it up and you put so much lipstick on that pig that it almost resembles something you want to kiss. Not. Thanks for your call, Bill. Let's go over and say hello to Martin Feldman, standing by to talk about carpal tunnel syndrome. Dr. Martin Feldman's a holistic physician in New York City. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. The war on carpal tunnel, however, is being won because we have some natural therapies. What are the symptoms of this problem? Here are the symptoms. Numbness, tingling, weakness, or pain in the first four fingers of the hand, not the pinky, the other four fingers. You may also notice a lack of motor control. You may have a loss of sensation to heat and cold. Who's at risk? Persons who do highly repetitive use of the fingers. Carpenters, violinists, mechanics. People use computers. Some players of golf and tennis. However, any two people may perform the exact same task and they may not get the same carpal tunnel problem. There are approximately 2 million women, Americans affected as we speak, with more women than men. And what's happening here? The carpal tunnel is a tunnel in the wrist, on the palm side of the wrist, whereby the median nerve goes through this carpal tunnel, and therefore is a very small tunnel in there, and any kind of inflammation can affect that nerve and give the symptoms because the tunnel is kind of aggravated. And what can be an underlying condition relating to this thing? If you have a tendonitis of the elbow, shoulder, other places, or arthritis anywhere in the body, it can be part of an inflammatory process that also affects the median nerve area. Diabetes will have a major impact, and undiagnosed hypothyroid may be part of the problem. Now, the therapies out there are primarily, unfortunately, non-conventional, are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, NSAID, the non-steroids anti-inflammatory. They're they help with the pain, but they're very dangerous in the long run. However, surgery is another issue whereby we can almost always avoid surgery. However, one good thing from conventional medicine would be immobilizing the affected area with a splint. The splint is very helpful and it may be essential. Some of the nutritional aspects of this, manganese, incredibly helpful, at least 50 milligrams a day.
Marty, we're running out of time, so if you could, instead of explaining what each one does, just if you could please just give us what they are.
Okay. Manganese, B-complex, B6, algae DHA or fish oil EPA, curcumin, glucosamine sulfate, chondroitin sulfate, and test your vitamin D level via 25-hydroxy blood laboratory test, CPT 82306. You need your vitamin D up to 50 or more as part of the carpal tunnel repair. And this is very, very workable. We get great results and should be part of all conventional medicine. Should move over toward this area.
Marty Feldman, thank you very much, Marty. Marty Martin Feldman can be reached at 212-744-4413. That brings us up to the end of our program, and I want to thank everyone for taking your time to listen. Now let's say hello to Mike Rubert, who's back live, and see what's on his show this evening. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. It's been a great little time off. I hear you guys are doing great. I really enjoyed the last part of your show. Tonight we're catching up on a lot of business. The world has really turned a corner on collapse. We're in a whole, the song just modulated, if you know anything about music. And the tempo and the intensity have changed. And that's where we're going tonight. We're going into a deep. We're also going to talk about our computers being, our IT communications being hacked a little bit this last week.
Okay. By the way, just some good news, and we just found this out on Friday. The number one group up on the internet when it comes to searches is Fox Network and Fox News. Down at the bottom is WBAI, I think 12,000, and then Pacifica is right behind that, and then you have Tom Hartman, some others, and then Democracy Now! Way down there. NPR is down there. They got, I think, 20 million or so. And then MSNBC, but Progressive Radio Network is right behind Fox at 110 million.
Well, what do you know? Well, just listening to the great passion your last segment from you, I can say we're singing the right note at the right time. We're in key with the orchestra, and we've been waiting to sing this song for a long time. So hats off to all of us here.
Good, I agree. 110 million people seeking out something on progressive issues, and we're the number one. So Mike Rupert, our Sunday night superstar, coming at you in just 30 seconds. I look forward to listening to it upstairs in my office tonight. Have a great show, Mike.
Bye-bye. Thank you.